The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So can everybody hear me okay? In the outer hall? Good. Okay. So there's a Sufi story, teaching story, where this Sufi sage named Mullah Nasruddin is out in the dark on the street under the lamppost on his knees, crawling around looking for something. And a neighbor comes by and sees him there and says, "Mullah, what's going on?" And he says, "I lost my keys. And I'm looking for them." And the neighbor says, "Well, where did you lose your keys?" "Well, I lost them over there in the park." "But then why are you looking for them here?" "Well, this is where the light is." So sometimes we're looking, but we look only where the light is, and we sometimes don't notice what we won't find what we're looking for. The light in our practice is the light of awareness. But some of us have a habit of shining the light only in certain directions, in certain ways. And so when we look where the light is shining. And part of Buddhist practice is to learn where the best places are to shine your light. You have this beautiful light, wonderful light of awareness that can be used. And it can be used, there are certain directions, certain ways to use it best. So that's part of the topic for today. So one of the great distinctions that exists in the early Buddhist tradition is between two sides of our life, or two aspects of our human life. And one aspect is the part of our life that has to do with the physical world, the sense world, the world that our senses can be in touch with. And if your light only shines out in the world, out in the world of where our senses can see, you know, eyes, ears, nose, and you're looking for happiness, then you'll search and look for it in the world. And so you might think that things of the world will provide you with happiness. So you might think that having wealth or having a wonderful relationship or having a home or having, you know, all kind, you can go through the list, right, of things that we want. And so some people spend a lot of time negotiating, a lot of time in their life preparing, setting up the conditions so hopefully they can have the things in the world they think that will make them happy. And it's possible that a lot of the things that people chase after in the world can only bring pleasure, but not happiness. And happiness is much deeper. And so where do we find happiness? So the distinction is that there's another place we can go, and that is there's an inner world that could be called the world of the heart, that has its own laws, has its own ways of expressing self or being discovered. And the happiness of the heart, the happiness of the inner life, does not depend on the things of the world. So if your light is only shining on the world out there, then you're looking, that's all you'll find is what out there. But if you can turn the light around and find it in your heart, then you'll find something, you'll find a treasure, you'll find your own inner wealth, you'll find a capacity for happiness, which is very, very different than the happiness that comes from winning the lottery or getting something, just, you know, something. And so part of Buddhist practice is to learn to take your light, the wonderful flashlight of awareness that you have, and learn to train it to pay attention to this inner life, the heart. But that's a hard thing to do for many people because, one, many people have never been taught or pointed to their heart as something important. And because we have this wonderful thinking mind, which very easily spins out, gets agitated, the thinking mind can have kind of a mind of its own. And the thinking mind has a way of pulling attention into that world there and away from what's deeper and more essential inside. And the thinking mind, sometimes I think of it as an endless freeway, the entrance and exit, so freeway just goes around and around. It doesn't actually go anywhere, but around and around, and you're kind of stuck on the traffic, going around and around. That sometimes we just chase our thoughts like a cat chasing its tail, just chasing and chasing, and it doesn't go anywhere. If anything, it makes us more agitated. And so, but there's a kind of camouflage or kind of authority that sometimes the agitated, fearful, desiring mind has, and that is that if only you can think properly, think your way, you can think your way to a solution. And so the mind can stay caught up in its thoughts, stay up in its wanting, desiring, want, whatever. And so the light goes there, and it's self-perpetuating. It keeps going. It kind of disconnects us from what's deeper inside if we kind of get preoccupied in that world. So the Buddha talked about this inner world that we want to pay attention to. We want to see that, at least we want to be able to see that both are going on. There's both this world that we connect to, the world of the senses, and there's a world we can connect to that of the heart. And so we want to be able to drop into the heart and discover what happiness is down there. There was a man that came to the Buddha. Some of the texts say that it was a cousin that he had. So maybe because it was a cousin, he was more honest with the Buddha than maybe some people would have been. And he came to the Buddha and he said, I understand your teachings pretty well. Let's see, said it. Yeah, I understand the Dhamma taught by you. Even so, at times, greed, hate, and delusion invade my mind and remain. So even though I understand the teaching, greed, hate, and delusion still come. And this is a very important point also, that you can understand all the Dharma you want. You can get a PhD in Buddhist studies. And it doesn't, you can still have all the greed, hate, and delusion left intact. And so this man asks the Buddha, what is it that I have to abandon? What have I not abandoned yet so that I could really become free? And the Buddha then said, it's not completely clear what he says about what needs to be abandoned, but it seems to be this desire for things in the material world. And that there's not just things, but also people and status and all this kind of stuff we want from the worldly world out there. But then this is why I want to share this particular teachings with you. Because then the Buddha says something very interesting. He says, that a person will continue to be caught up in the world, continue to be caught up in the world of senses, if they have not discovered. It's a little bit complicated to read because ancient kind of language. If a person has not attained joy and happiness that are separate, are apart from sensual pleasures, apart from unwholesome states, then that person will still be attracted to the sensual world. The sensual world, this ancient text, is not just the world of nice pleasures, but it's really anything in the whole world of the senses can pick up and be part of. So here the Buddha says that unless a person discovers some happiness and joy, you cannot expect to be free of a neurotic, attached desire for the world itself. So rather than saying you have to just deny yourself the pleasures of the world if you want to be happy, Buddha is saying if you want to let go of the neurotic mind, you have to be happy first. You have to have joy and happiness. So, and the joy of happiness he's talking about is the joy and happiness of the heart. So what this means is that we have to, in terms of this wonderful light of awareness that we have, it really helps if we start noticing, being able to notice the quality of our own hearts and be able to identify and recognize when there's some deeper feeling of abiding well-being that we carry with us, that's within us. And so, it's very easy to overlook that, to not pay attention to some abiding sense of well-being, because we have important things to do. We have important things to get. We have important things to worry about. We have important things to, you know, all kinds of television to watch. There's all kinds of things to do that we're paying attention to the world, so that we don't really pay attention carefully in some careful way here. What's going on here? So are there times when you experience some deep abiding sense of well-being? What are the conditions? What are the times when that exists? What are the things that are conducive for some inner sense of well-being, a radiance of the heart, a sense of warmth or sense of joy or peace or delight or happiness, kind of deep inside, that doesn't depend on what's going on in the world? Some people can get something close to that, or get some sense of it from profound feelings of gratitude. When we have a gratitude, is something does when gratitude touches the heart, it does something wonderful about kind of opening it up. It does some wonderful softening it. Kind of it vibrates in a nice way. And so what about gratitude? What about gratitude for this life of ours? And last night I saw a TED talk, movie maker, and he'd taken words by Brother David Stendhalross, the wonderful Catholic monk who wrote a book on gratitude, talking about gratitude. And it was quite touching to hear this Catholic monk talk about gratitude for just being alive and all the things that are given to us, and just to be able to breathe and to see and to have sights and sounds and just be able to be conscious. How often are we grateful? How often do we take our life, or all the functions, complicated functioning of a human heart and mind for granted, and want, you know, all we want is our coffee. So the other kind of wonderful experience, I think, for some people that can touch to the heart in some wonderful way, is experiences of awe. Awe in nature, you know, standing on the edge of the Grand Canyon, standing on the edge of the Pacific and looking out. There's a wonderful tree right up here in the foothills on top of Skyline called the Methuselah tree. And I used to live near the Methuselah tree. I used to go visit it. How many have seen the Methuselah tree? How long have the rest of you lived in the peninsula? You know, however long you've been here, the Methuselah tree has been here a lot longer. I think they think it's, I don't know what it anymore what it is, but it's 1,500, 2,000-year-old tree that's up there on Skyline. It's one of the few trees that somehow wasn't logged. It's just kind of across the street from the Corte Madera Open Space Preserve, just off Skyline. It's only like maybe 20 feet off Skyline. And you can see this big tree. It's quite something. So it's kind of awe that these things have been around for so long. So to close your eyes and meditate and sit there with gratitude for being alive, gratitude to have this operating system that we have, can touch the heart. To sit and close your eyes in meditation, what does it take to be in awe I mean, it's an amazing thing to be alive. To sit down, sit quiet, and let go of some of your thoughts about, you know, the world that you have and your concerns and fears, and really kind of take in what it is that's to be a human being and alive that moment with your eyes closed, and kind of be in awe of this gratitude and awe. What is going on inside? What's the operating system? What about this inner well-being? There's a story, a wonderful cartoon that I like of Charlie Brown, where Charlie's talking to Linus, and he says, so you don't think my father knows how to fix the car? And Linus says, don't tell me. Charlie said, just the other day, we were driving along and there was a loud knocking in the engine. And Linus says, oh, don't tell me he stopped the car and fixed it. And Charlie says, no, he turned up the radio. So what we're trying to do in meditation is to fine-tune the motor so we hum along nicely. If there's something which is off-kilter, something is knocking or something, we don't turn up the radio, we don't distract ourselves from what's going on. We stop and open the hood and really pay attention to what's here and what's going on inside of us. And so we want to kind of attend to that carefully so that our whole system, our inner system, can work in harmony, can work in unison in a nice way, so it all can hum. And the unified operation of our hearts, our minds working together, settled at peace, the whole thing begins to hum. And the way it, to change the analogy, the way it hums it starts being like a cat purring in there. And one of the great experiences of meditation practice is to start feeling the heart begin to purr, the inner life begin to purr, just because everything is operating in harmony, everything is settled and relaxed and present, and nothing needs to happen in the world. You don't have to get what you want, you don't have to fix your past, you don't have to fix your future, you don't have to win the arguments, you don't have to even have your coffee. You can let this inner life kind of purr, and the purring that goes when in meditation, when really settled, is one of the great pleasures of life, one of the great things of life. So what it requires is to pay attention to this, to be willing to turn the attention away from the world and give some attention to the heart. Some people complain that kind of idea because some people say it's selfish. We should be involved in helping the world. And sure, we should be helping the world. But sometimes the people who say, you know, this is selfish to meditate, you know, we should be helping the world, they spend a lot of time watching TV. What authority do they have to say that you can't spend an hour a day meditating when they spend 3 hours on TV because they're not helping the world? I think it's a great thing to begin to rectify, harmonize the inner life, the inner world, to connect to it. It's a wonderful way to then resource to be able to help the world. So we turn around in meditation is one of those places where we start paying attention to what's going on in here. But it doesn't have to only be in meditation. But we want to kind of be sensitive, attuned to the times when we're humming, when we feel good inside. But not the kind of good that comes from because we've had some great success in the world. We got some great pleasure in the world. Because our friends are coming and praising us because we've, you know, done some great thing in the world. And we love the praise and we feel kind of energized. The kind of humming inside that comes when we feel at peace with ourselves. When we're settled in ourselves. When there's no inner conflict here. No conflict whatsoever. The idea is, the goal in Buddhism is to have a unified sense of being. All aspects of ourselves are existing in harmony. The motor is working, it's all humming along beautifully. There's no piece of the motor which is off kilter and knocking against the side or something. So that's a wonderful task. It's a wonderful endeavor to work towards that. And sometimes what that means when we turn in is we become aware of what is not in harmony inside, the conflict and difficulties. And then we learn to relax with that, to learn to be at ease with that. It's okay not to react to it. Remember, if we live in the thinking mind, in the discursive, neurotic mind that's spinning around and chasing its own tail, then when we drop into the what's uncomfortable inside, we tend to spin out from it and not really give it careful, full attention. So to drop down and feel what's going on there, and so that something can begin to kind of relax or thaw or unfold or find its way to working harmoniously is part of the tasks of meditation. So the Buddha said to his cousin, in order to overcome greed, hate, and delusion, you have to have a reference point of some inner happiness and joy. One of the interesting things that can happen is that many people can taste some degree of inner happiness and joy, some sense of well-being and peace. Sometimes it's accidental. We don't know why it happened. Sometimes it may be from meditation, maybe other things that do it for us. But then there's no training or no valuing of staying close to that. And one of the nice things to do is to learn to value the inner sense of harmony and well-being and let that be a place that we come from and a place where we act from into the world. And it's very interesting to study yourself and see those times when you feel really settled, calm, peaceful, and at ease, what happens when you step into the world that loses that connection for you? Can you stay connected to yourself and connected to the world in this way? Some people want to give it up because this peace and inner sense of well-being feels kind of vulnerable. And so it feels a little bit kind of threatenable if you go into the world that way. Some people, the concerns we have about what goes on take precedence, and we so easily lose track. We're busy, we have a lot of things to do, and so we get caught up in our concerns, and we lose touch with this important resource we have of inner well-being that, you know, if we have it. Many people don't have any experience of acting, speaking and acting in the world from a place of being calm and settled, from this inner radiance that can be here. And one of the great discoveries to happen in Buddhist practice is how to enter into the world and come from a very different place than we usually do. To come from a place of inner harmony and well-being rather than come from a place of self-preoccupation. The whole teachings of not self in Buddhism, not be caught up in self, self-identity, me, myself, and mine, is because the me, myself, and mine kind of thinking is thinking of the head. And if we're caught up in me, myself, and mine, then we're not connected to the heart. But to drop the idea, the barriers, the tightness of me, myself, and mine, and be able to come from the heart, come from this inner sense of harmony, well-being, peace, we can still take care of ourselves in the world. But it's a different kind of street smarts that we have to understand how to do if we stay in touch with that place than if we go into the kind of planning mind, calculating mind, thinking mind, selfing mind, egotistical mind, self-centered mind that goes on. It requires us to keep relaxing. Keep relaxing into the heart. Keep relaxing the tension that comes up. Keep relaxing the tightness. Keep relaxing from the way we go into the head and into the thoughts and lose touch with ourselves. To come from the heart. So in this story with the Buddha, with his cousin, he tells his cousin how important it is to have this inner harmony, this inner happiness and joy if you want to overcome greed, hate, and delusion. And then he says that, then the Buddha talks about a time that he visited a bunch of ascetic practitioners. And these are people who, you know, did all the self-mortification practices. And in talking to them, they explained to the Buddha that their belief was that you cannot experience happiness through happiness. Happiness is only attained through pain. And now, you know, the particular philosophy that they have is maybe not so common in our culture, but I think that in some ways some of us will also think the same thing, that, you know, we feel really bad about ourselves and we feel like we deserve to suffer. And only if we allow ourselves to suffer and really feel the burden of our troubles, if only we share the burdens of our troubles with our friends, only if we really kind of stay in touch with how terrible things are and how difficult things are, that only then somehow something good will happen. And so there can be a priority given sometimes to suffering really well. Now, I'm sure none of you suffer really well. None of you have mastered it that well. But you might know someone who's mastered suffering. You know, and like they've really, you know, happiness comes from suffering. That's be their motto. So they're going to do it well. But the Buddha then goes on and uses his logic to talk to the ascetics and say, you know, this is what you're doing is ridiculous, basically. And then the Buddha says, however, so then they said, these ascetics say to the Buddha, they say, the ascetics say, friend, pleasure is not to be gained through pleasure. Or the word pleasure here is actually a bad translation. The word is happiness, sukha, the opposite of dukkha. Happiness is not to be gained through happiness. Happiness is to be gained through pain. For were happiness to be gained through happiness, then the king would gain lots of happiness because he has more pleasure, sensual pleasure, than the Buddha. So imagine the Buddha is not an ascetic, but he's a renunciant. So he's living, you know, with just one robe, one bowl, lives under trees, just kind of a very simple life. And the king, he has all the wealth and sensual pleasures you can imagine. So, you know, and so they compare the Buddha to the king. And the Buddha says, well, if the king sat down to meditate, could he sit still for a day, 2 days, 3 days at a time meditating and experience happiness and pleasure, happiness and joy? And they say, oh no, the king can't sit still for a minute. And then, so the Buddha says, and the Buddha says, but friends, I can abide without moving my body or uttering a word, experiencing exclusively happiness for one day and night, for 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 days and nights, for 7 days and nights. What do you think, friends? That being so, who dwells in greater happiness, the king or I? And the ascetics say, that being so, you abide in greater happiness than the king. So what kind of happiness do you want? Do you want the happiness of a king, or do you want the happiness of a Buddha? And the happiness of the Buddha is more portable. Happiness of a king, you have to lock it up at night and, you know, get a big entourage to take it with you. It's something you carry in your heart, what the Buddha is pointing to. So what's your experience of inner well-being, happiness, joy, that is independent of the world? What is your experience of your motor humming along beautifully that, I apologize for the change of metaphor, that you're purring, you know, really well-being? And can you recognize it more often, even little hints of that? Can you appreciate the value of that and begin nurturing that, nourishing that, developing that, supporting that? And in this way, the the more neurotic or the more attached states of mind, like greed, hate, and delusion, that Buddhism is trying to overcome. It's not a matter of struggling against greed, hate, and delusion. It's not a matter of depriving yourself or feeling bad about yourself, but rather from having inner happiness and well-being, the neurotic states begin to dissolve. They become less and less interested to be, it's less and less interesting to be attached in things. It's less interested to be caught up in self because you know a much better place to be. So to know the better place to be, and that better place to be, if you can rest in that, one of the great things to do for the world is to step into the world from that place, speak from that place, act from that place, care for the world from that place. It's a much better place to act from than acting from only the discursive mind that's trying to kind of, you know, running around chasing its thoughts. So, we have about 5 minutes, and I'm curious if any of you have any questions or comments or protests.
I have a question about in relation to this talk, suffering as not as pain, but maybe as a gateway to something, to what you're speaking of, a gateway to opening the heart, as opposed to suffering being pain.
Oh, that way. Yeah, tell us about that.
I'd rather not. I'd rather hear.
But you know something about it.
Maybe yes, something. Well, I've been as a consequence of a question for the Dhamma mentorship program, I've been reflecting on that and writing something on that. Your talk is pointing me in that direction, and I am asking your thoughts on how it's a gateway.
Thank you for asking, but I'm actually more interested in your thoughts. And now that you reminded me you're in the Dharma Mentoring Program, I think I'm allowed to ask.
Well, now I feel like I don't have any choice. But
you have some choice. We can wait for later privately.
I'll answer it as best I can. I'll probably be sorry afterwards and think that that isn't what I meant. But what I'm looking at is, for myself, practice for a long time didn't produce a lot of results. It produced a lot of understanding, a little bit the way you were referring to earlier. I can't. I've lost that. Yeah. But understanding. But it was not of the heart. So suffering, going through painful experiences, took the teachings and transformed them into understanding in the world somehow.
So there's one thing to understand intellectually. You're saying once you started tuning into your suffering, then the teachings became something you understood a new way, a deeper way?
Yes.
Beautiful. That's
great. But that's my own experience, and that's subjective. And now that I've sat here and and said what I have. I'm curious to hear your view of it. And I think that's a fair question now as well.
It's great. I appreciate you playing along with this, and your reply was wonderful. Thank you. And what I'd like to say is my early years of meditation practice, I suffered a lot. And what I did was I opened to it. I stayed with it. I didn't avoid it. I didn't recoil from it. I wasn't smart enough to think I was supposed to fix it or do something about it. I just kind of sat with it. And what happened was that as I did that, it awoke in me compassion. It wasn't planned, it wasn't something I thought about. But as I stayed with it and just felt it and kind of relaxed with it and opened to it, that my capacity to feel compassion grew and grew. And that was a beautiful quality of heart that has remained, something that's very valuable. So that's part of the value of opening to suffering. Is that answering the question?
Yes.
Maybe one more? I saw a hand there. Yes, if you pass the mic back. You, in the back row.
So you mentioned earlier about being really great at suffering. So in my earlier years, when I was younger, I remember... feeling at, just a little backstory. I'm generally not a depressive type. And so I remember there were times when I did feel depressed, and I actually delighted in the depression. And I actually looked for it, because what it gave me access to was something deeper in my heart. Mm. And I felt, because I was suffering, it helped me open up in being able to feel more compassion mm-hmm. for myself and for others. And as a result of that, so the reason why I look for it is because it gave me an artistic expression.
Mm.
And like, I'm like, wow, I could feel like I'm an artist when I'm in the moment of in the suffering.
I see. So for you, it opened to something deeper for you. It's like a door, like the author was asking about a door. It was a door of a deeper connection to you, and also sounds like maybe a deeper connection to understand other people as well.
Exactly. I mean, just being able to, like I said, have compassion mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. myself and for others mm-hmm. and seeing more mm-hmm. that I normally wouldn't be able to see at the surface.
Yeah. That's great. I can understand this very well. But it's not the experience of a lot of people who have depression, that depression has that kind of satisfying feeling, connecting something deeper. What do you think about, what was it about how you related to the depression, or how you understood it, or how you felt it, that for you allowed you to use it as a door to go deeper?
Right.
What was it? What attitude? What was it about you that made depression different than someone else who's drowning in the depression?
I don't know. I think when I get to that state, it just, something opens up in my heart. I just feel something in my heart, and it just... there's a bigger sense of like that I'm in touch with the universe.
Uh-huh.
Like I'm not alone. Like somehow I just feel more through my heart. I don't know how to describe it any more than that.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't had that experience with depression, but I've had it with things like sadness and grief, where feeling with some deep sadness and grief, and feeling certainly painful. But together with the pain was a feeling of rightness. It just felt like, given how this situation is, there's something kind of like, something is open in the heart, something feels right. Or, I don't know, it's very hard to put words on it that does make me sound like I'm a monster. but the sadness and the grief somehow felt like there was, it was part of the harmony. It was part of the fullness of being alive. And so it was unfortunate to experience, unfortunate to have the loss. But to have it open up inside to a feeling of fullness and aliveness felt very, for me, very meaningful, very much being present, kind of free in the midst of it as a human being.
Yeah, actually, that now reminds me. I last year took a drawing class, and it's all about contrast, the dark and the light. And I really, and when I was doing this exercise, I thought, oh, wow, that's actually how life is. It's like you don't see the beauty until you see the dark. So you have to have darkness in order to see the light, and all of it illuminates, right? And so it's like when you're down and you're depressed, it's like there's a contrast. Because like I said, generally, I'm not a depressive, I don't have a depressive personality. So I actually delight in actually having those moments because I feel so, I can see all of it, and there's this contrast that makes me appreciate life that much more.
Very nice. Thank you. Some of the things that I know that are to help what this we're talking about now is it really helps to relax. So if you feel difficult emotions, it really helps to relax. Just relax the body, relax the heart, relax the mind. And it helps a lot if you know how not to get caught up in your thoughts. If you believe your thoughts, caught up in your thoughts, it's very easy to drown with strong, difficult emotions because the thoughts, the stories, the meaning-making we make add to it and add to it and just kind of makes it much more difficult. But to learn not to believe our thoughts so much or let go of them, have a quieter mind, to relax very deeply and open, then generally opening to even difficult emotions tends to work out well. It tends to open up to some depth of our humanness and move to something deeper and deeper that can be very, very satisfying. But it's not automatic. I think you have to know these other things to do. So thank you. And I would encourage you this week to see if you can recognize in yourself happiness, well-being, that comes from just being alive, from a well-humming motor that is not dependent on things in the world going right. You know, not being, you know, wonderful things, having fun things or nice things, but just somehow you're connected to yourself in a deep way and there's happiness there. So see if you can recognize that and find it in the small little corners of the day and see if you can let it grow. Great. Thank you.